Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, January 12, 2017, commercial-free as usual. First of all, again, another frequency change started yesterday. In the last month, the FCC has changed my frequency twice. anyway, I don't know. But the frequency I'm on right now is 5.935 megahertz. I've posted this on my webpage and also on the How to Listen webpage. Also, simulcast all year long, 6.115 megahertz simulcast. And typically, no matter where you are, you can pick up one of those frequencies worldwide. And remember, as a note, my summertime frequency is different than my wintertime frequency, Northern Hemisphere winter, that is. And in the summer, it changes again. And this change occurs on the same day where the daylight savings time changes. So in the fall, when daylight savings time changes, that's when my frequency changes to the winter time. In the spring, when you change from daylight savings time, then that is when my, this is in the United States time, of course, not all countries do the daylight savings time thing. Not all states do, but when it changes back in the spring, then that's when I start my summertime frequency. So anyway, just some changes there. A lot of people listen to the archives on my webpage. Of course, it re-airs on WTWW Nashville, Tennessee, and there are no frequency changes there. It's always the same. But anyway, all the different ways to listen to my radio show are listed on my webpage. You scroll down a little bit, there's the center column. It's how to listen to my radio show. Tonight's show, the main science topic, I will be talking about electrical currents in the galaxy among star systems. Not all stars have these broad electrical currents that pass down the galactic arms. Actually, they're there. You just cannot see them, but some star groups have very distinct visible light electrical discharge going on. It looks like a neon light bulb lighting up in some of them, and I have a great picture of one on my webpage. Go see it, jmccsci.com. Go to the top there. Yeah, so anyway, that's the main science topic. Another main science topic, SSL. Oh, man, is this a complex and just deranged topic. It has to do with computer security. Is something that affects all of you every day if you're doing online purchases or if you have a web page where you're selling. When you go to a web page and it has that HTTPS, the S there indicates secure socket layer encryption. And what they're trying to do is force all web pages to go to this so that you can be recognized as a secure page. But this only has to do if you're collecting data. So anyway, I'll explain more about that. But they're trying to force all web pages to go to that. And if you don't, then you're not going to be listed on Chrome. Chrome won't even show you. But anyway, it's a complex topic. I'll be talking about that. Just a quick mention about Trump. what was it? 2 days ago, he slams the CNN. He had his first news conference as president-elect. So the CNN guy comes out of the gate trying to slam him right in the beginning of the news conference, and Trump just shuts him down, says, I'm not going to give you any questions. You're fake news. He calls CNN fake news, and are they ever reeling? Trump, I like this guy. He doesn't take crap from anybody. I really like Trump, and he's a guy. You know, he's not taking a salary. I don't care. You criticize people all you want. Here's a guy who's not taking a salary to be president. He's there to fix stuff. He's cutting himself off from all of his business ties. And, you know, this guy is for real. Additionally, the other day, I didn't know this till I was on John Moore's show as guest this week. And by the way, I was a guest Wednesday morning, second hour, that's 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time on the Joyce Riley Power Hour. I recommend that everybody go listen to that show because don't listen to the water filter commercials. Buy water filter filters from me because I have the best ones on the planet. But anyway, no, go listen to that Joyce Riley show yesterday. It was really, really good. They and Joyce and Daniel, the co-host, just let me roll. I mean, Daniel's good. He gives me a question, and then he lets me roll. And I have my talking points, and I got in all of my talking points. I had a page and a half of handwritten talking notes. I got them all in that show. I highly recommend. I'm not going to repeat that. I'm not going to do Trump stuff on this show. But I will mention that there's a war going on behind the scenes, CIA versus Trump. And they are going to, I just think that we're in some very dangerous times. But I think they're realizing, too, that if they pull something, not their goose is going to be double cooked or triple cooked. And I'm sure in the background, there's some powerful forces moving and talking, having silent conversations in back rooms, like don't even try anything because we're going to smoke you. And that's what's going on. There's a civil war going on behind the scenes, believe me. So, and Obama, by the way, is leaving the United States on Air Force One on January 15th, and just a couple days, and is not planning to come back with it until after the inauguration. So what's that all about? That was sent in by a listener. Now that's gotten around, so thank goodness somebody noticed that. Okay, that's enough political talk. But this week, volcanoes, Turrialba in central Costa Rica going off. And from what I understand, this is a regular occurrence, so San Jose residents are regularly dusting things off. They said there will be more, but apparently this is something that's ongoing. Volcanic ash is very bad for agriculture. Once volcanic ash has become soil and broken down, it's not so acidic, and the acidic part is washed away with the rain. But ash, as it comes out of the volcano, is very bad for agriculture. So I hope the people in that region, there's a lot of agriculture, there's a lot of sustainable living groups there. I hope they're all good. I hope they're going to get through this fine. So anyway, also, Bogoslav in Alaska, an entire island blew up. That island is not there anymore. It's gone. Blew 35,000 feet into the air, a smoke trail. That's the end of Bogoslav Island volcano in the Alaskan and the Aleutian Islands. And, of course, up there, there's not a lot of damage to be done. From what I saw, the ash cloud moved easterly across the Yukon, but two major volcanoes, and of course, these are not earth-threatening, but just to give us a little tap on the shoulder that this is a very active planet we live on, and volcanoes, active volcanoes are a part of it. Active volcanoes are a symbol of recent geological activity on planet Earth, major geological activity, because these volcanoes would not be active if there had not been serious repercussions from a large comet that came through the solar system, became the planet Venus within historical times, recorded by ancients and documented all over the world, became the planet Venus. We know this from the Mayan Popol Vuh, that the Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, whose heart became the planet Venus. I mean, what more description do you need than that? And of course, the Mayan mythology is based on Venus. Their clocks, they're the major religious centers, the major temples, the platforms are dedicated to Venus. Not this little planet that we see up there today, but Venus, the god that ruled the night sky for hundreds of years and became the planet Venus. Just a little reminder, there's some new comets in the solar system, some just recently discovered, none of them earth-threatening. But remember my prediction on January 29th to February 4th, the small comet that's passing through the solar system will be on the sunward side of planet Earth. And we could have some weather resulting from that in that time frame. So it's coming out, and then the closest approach, which really isn't that close, is going to be a number of days later. And I think that was February 11th. But the real date, as I pointed out quite a few shows ago, when I originally announced all of the effects of this comet, and unfortunately, I have not had time to confirm or observe the Venus and the Mercury alignments, although I did get to see the Venus one with the naked eye, and I swear to that I could see actually comet activity around the planet Venus through the atmosphere. It was a night. I was in a very dark area, very remote area, and I looked up and I just said, you know, that planet Venus, because I watch Venus every night, and it looked bigger and hazier than normal, but that's not a scientific confirmation. It's just my off-the-cuff analysis. There is a 2,000-square-mile ice sheet breaking off Antarctica right now, and it's going to break away 2,000 square miles, and eventually it will float away. It's about 10% of the bay that covers. But remember, Antarctica as a whole is increasing in size, and when they talk about these kind of things, of course, the global climate change people love to point at this and try and pretend this is, you know, the end of the world and they're right about global climate change. But no, the overall Antarctic ice sheet has been increasing for some time. So you can't just take these little isolated areas and examine them. But anyway, my idea has been, and I'm trying to get some behind the scenes, some work on this, is to harvest this ice and move it up to areas like the Sahara Desert. We're talking vast amounts of water here, clean, fresh water. How would we move it? That's the question. Well, with the wing generator. And I have a design where you put wing generators, you basically carve these in the icebergs in the shape of a barge, and then basically put wing generators on top, fasten them down, and then have basically big propellers that are directly driven by the wind. So it's a totally different form of propulsion for boats. I proposed this with the wing generator, and by the way, which has some progress, undergoing progress, and I'll keep you posted on that. Next, in Mexico, a listener requested I comment on this. Mexico is privatizing, or at least opening up to private investment. Their Pemex is their national oil company. When I was living in Mexico as a youth, that's when the nationalization of the international companies in Mexico occurred. I believe it was Echeverria who did that. And nationalized and throughout, I mean, it was kind of a bitter battle throughout the oil companies, including the United States. I don't know if you'd call them United States, the international oil companies that we consider, like the Mobils and the Exxons, etc., threw them out. Now they're opening it up to private investment, and this is a big international deal because Mexico has very rich oil reserves, not as big as Venezuela. But Mexico is a very wealthy country, and I saw it when I lived there. I taught what I was doing as I was living and teaching the very richest people possibly on the planet. Really, a lot of the very, very wealthy people on the planet live in Mexico City, still do. And so I was in their homes teaching the kids, tutoring and mathematics and science, etc. And so I got to know some of the people and saw the opulence of the very wealthy who lived there. And then I also traveled and lived amongst the very poorest of the Mexicans. So I got to see both sides and understood the point of view of both. But it's a country that really the problem of Mexicans in the United States results from the fact that the government keeps those people in the dirt, and all of the wealth is maintained in the hands of a very few. So that translates into the United States problem. And literally, thank goodness Trump is coming along. It's forcing the issue because I know a lot of Mexicans. I talk to Mexicans. I speak the language. I've lived there. The vast majority of Mexicans I talk to, and I always ask them when I meet somebody new, I ask them, I say, this is the way I put it. Do you want to, would you like to go back to Mexico? And they look at me like I'm crazy. And these are both legal and illegal aliens in the United States. And I said, but if you had a good job in Mexico, would you go back to Mexico? And they said, well, there aren't any good jobs. They're all taken or they're political appointees jobs or things like that. So, but I said, no. Let's just imagine that you could get a good job and have a good living and you know, have a nice house in Mexico. Would you go back? And they all say they would go back in a second because, you know, Mexico has a rich culture. It has a rich history. And here you have the Mexicans who like warm climates living up in frigid places like, you know, the upper Midwest. And even California doesn't have that great a climate. Lots of them would like to go back to Mexico, but there's nothing there. It's just for those people, it's a pit. I mean, for the wealthy people, like I say, living in vast opulence up in Las Palmas area of Mexico City, where I spent time, like I say, in the houses, amazingly gorgeous, beautiful houses with, you know, maids and servants, etc. So anyway, is this a good thing for Mexico? I really, you know, I don't really think that I don't have an opinion either way as whether the privatization or the adding of international funds, private funds into the Mexican energy industry is a good idea. I think in 10 years, when my wing generator is being installed throughout the world, that the energy industry, it's going to cause a major problem because that's a major source of income in the world. But what if you had energy that was literally a tenth the cost or a 50th of the cost of what it costs now? That money would go into something else. Because understand that the money that goes into the energy industry is like a black hole. It creates vast wealth for a few people like TJ, Pickens down there, or people like Bill Gates, who has big investment in oil. It was T. Boone Pickens or Warren Buffett, who made $28 billion this year selling water that he didn't own and selling energy from three-blade wind generators, which didn't produce any energy, that were purely government subsidized. This guy has, you know, made $28 billion on selling nothing. But anyway, the energy industry is a black hole economically. So all of the money that goes in there is for a few wealthy people. So my consideration, my belief, is that once that ends, once the energy becomes very affordable, we start transferring wind energy into electrical energy. We do away with coal, nuclear, and natural gas, which are the three big sources of energy. And we stop building hydro dams and destroying vast amounts of land and eliminate petroleum as a source of energy for transportation. Once those are done, and that vast amount of money that goes into energy today is going into other things, the world it would be like going out and bringing an asteroid into the Earth's economy filled with platinum and gold. It would be that major an effect on the economy, but it only affects those few rich people that are greedy and have control of those energy resources. It would also change politically the world because most of the wars that have been fought and that are going to be fought are going to be over energy. And when you don't have to fight for energy anymore, there's one thing left, and that's water. And that's something I'm trying to work on also, is showing that we don't have a water shortage problem. we have a water management problem. And the UN is behind that. The global elite are behind that. So at any rate, that's a little bit of a diversion from actually talking about Mexico allowing private investment into its oil industry, Pemex, which was nationalized, like I said, back in the early 1970s. But that's their problem. I'm sure they're looking for that investment, and a lot of that money is going to go into the pockets of politicians. Just a quick note, the sale on my webpage will be ending tomorrow. So go there for the 10 packs of filter elements, the water filters, etc. I'm restructuring the pricing. Some of the products will be packaged different. There's quite a few changes going on with the products. And so it's hard to say. Anyway, it's very difficult to explain all of this. But right now, you can still get the 10 packs of filter elements on sale, the standard size and the imperial size, the double wide, double flow rate, four times the lifetime in an imperial filter. My GF filters take out everything in one, and I had to get a kick when I'm in a guest on other people's radio shows and they have advertisement for other filters. They always kind of slip it in very subtly that you got to buy those add-on filters for fluoride and arsenic, and and that costs extra money, and those are not very good add-on filters. I used to sell them. It was the best technology a long time ago, but people are still trying to sell that just to take out arsenic and fluoride, and believe me, you want those out of your filters. My filters take it all out in one filter element, and so go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, check those out. Also remember, Carrot Bars, Via Viente, two great products that are listed there. And don't forget, if you don't belong yet to my paid cast, weekly extra science hours, deep dives into esoteric topics, $3.95 a month, and then you get each week another paid cast episode. Last week was a very good episode. I'm very proud of that show. It's called The Myth of Fusion Research. Very important show. And then this week's paid cast is let me read it off. It's kind of a long title. This is in the ongoing series of Tesla's Mind. What if Tesla's inventions were not confiscated? How would this have changed history? That's this week's topic. In other words, a lot of Tesla's major advancements were confiscated. And at key points in history, what would history be like if they would not have done that? And this is major, major, major. We're talking major differences in history that Tesla would have made if his inventions would have been allowed to come to the public. So that's in my paid cast. Go there. There's the link to the sign-up page to subscribe. Once again, jmccsci.com. Okay. On to the two main science topics. I'm going to start with SSL because I can always talk about Birkeland currents and Alphen currents and these electrical currents in outer space and in the solar system and describe the differences. But SSL is a topic that is hot right now. It's a current topic and it's very, very, very important. Okay, so what is SSL? SSL stands for Secure Sockets Layer. Now, this is something I'm an expert in. I have attended the standards meetings for a lot of these, for Ethernet, etc. I was in the standards meetings developing some of these, the protocols for the IP stack, it's called. It's the telecommunication protocols that allow international telecommunications of computer, also in the encryption. I broke the RSA encryption codes, which is part of this story. And RSA encryption codes, what are those? It's called public key is another term. The public key encryption codes, or SSL is another one. There's TSL, transport layer, secured transmission, TSL, transmission layer, secured protocol. And these are the layers which supposedly give you confidence when you're buying on the internet. Now, here's what's going on. There's some companies that are selling SSL certificates. What is an SSL certificate? Okay, say you have a web page, and people have asked me about my web page. Why don't I have a security layer HS? When you look at the URL for a web page, up in the URL little box on your browser, you have http://www.something. jmcanniescience.com is my web page. Or jmccsci.com is the short version I use for radio so you can remember it and spell it correctly and get there. So that my short URL points to the long URL and you get to the same place. But now some web pages you go to and they have HTTPS. The letter S as in Sam. What does that S mean? The S means that that is an SSL certified page. In other words, there's a company out there that does SSL certification that have looked at your page and deemed it secure, and then they tack on a layer of encryption, which is a public key encryption code which uses prime numbers. Now, if you know about my work on prime numbers, I broke the RSA encryption codes when I solved the problem of finding large prime numbers and factors of large numbers when you only have two prime factors. And anyway, I'm not going to try and explain a lot of that tonight. I have a book, two books actually. One is called Calculate Primes. That's where the initial work, mathematical work, solving the 2,500-year-old math problem, the structure of the prime numbers. And I have a formula and a process, and it's an understanding. It's not just a little formula, and you have to understand this formula and where it comes from and how it works. But basically, you start out with the number 0. You plug 0 into the generator function, and that gives you 0 and 1. Then you plug that into the generator function, and that gives you 0, 1, and 2. And then you plug those into the generator function, and it gives you 0, 1, and 2, and 3. Then you plug that into the generator function, and it gives you 1, 2, 3, and 5. You plug those into the generator function, and this is a function that you have to understand how mathematics works. It's a little formula, but it's very powerful, and it has a lot of meaning behind it. Lots of things go on in this little equation. It's kind of like an E equals MC squared type of equation that has very extensive meaning. Okay, so at any rate, the point is that you can directly calculate prime numbers from other prime numbers. The old way of doing finding prime numbers was either by using a supercomputer and dividing a number, like say some big number, and you divide it by all of the prime factors up to the square root of that number, and if you don't find a factor, in other words, if all the divisions result in a remainder with a remainder, then you have a prime number. Okay, but what I've done is I developed a system in which you use the prime numbers to generate more groups of prime numbers, and then that group generates a future group, etc., and they have closure and symmetry and reciprocity and many mathematical properties in this system of prime numbers. So you're in a closed system of just prime numbers. It's what people had been looking for literally for 2,500 years. And I published that book May 5th of 2007. Exactly 7 years later, and I didn't even know this was happening, I published a book. These are available on my webpage. It's called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And so what it does is it takes great big numbers that are provided by companies, especially the RSA company, and they have supercomputers, and they determine some big number that only has two prime factors. Those two prime factors are called the public and private keys, like keys to the concept as if you went into a safety deposit box and you go to the bank. You have a key, and the bank has a key. The bank can't open your box because they have one key. You have a key. You cannot open the box with just your key. So both the banker and you have to go into the safety deposit room. And of course, nobody else can open your box because you have the key to the safety deposit box. So the banker and you go into the room. You both put your keys in, turn the locks, and open the drawer. And it works the same way. So you get one of the private prime numbers, you get the public prime number, and then the holder, the encryption company, holds the other prime number. And so anyway, it's a complicated algorithm, but that's basically what it amounts to. So if you can factor large numbers very quickly, you can break the public encryption keys very quickly. And this is going on all the time. And this is why Target and these major corporations are being broken into. It's why hacking is a breeze these days. And you might think, well, why don't they just change it, use a new code? Well, that's because, as I explained in my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, I explain that the NSA has tooled up all of their equipment so they can break into your computer easily using public key encryption, because that's what they're selling you to protect your computer, which doesn't work because it's broken. But the NSA doesn't want to retool, and maybe somebody would come out with an encryption system that they couldn't get into. So they just keep the old one. They force these companies, and the companies are happy to sell it to you because they don't have to change anything. They can keep selling you broken stuff, not change anything, and claim it's good. Okay, so that's a long story in itself. But, okay, back to SSL. Here's the situation. There's two problems. First of all, take my homepage and sales page, for example. When you go to my sales page, I do not have HTTPS. Why? Because when you go to my sales page and you click on something to buy, you are not buying from my sales page. That's just a page with buttons on it. When you click on a button, you say you want to buy my kitchen standard water filter. There's the order button. You click on that. You go off to a secure Visa page that is secure. So I don't take your information on my web page. I don't take your name, your email. I don't take your credit card information. You tunnel through my page and you go to a site that is secure, and it has much better security than SSL. So even my processor page, my merchant processor for my merchant account, or if you go to one of my other web pages where there's, say, a PayPal, if you buy the Paidcast and you pay through PayPal, you're not buying it from my page. I'm not taking your information. And of course, after the sale is done, they send me enough information so I can fulfill your order. With the Paidcast, you get it by email, or if you're buying a water filter or books or the WeCalendar Sunstar clock or something from my webpage, they send me, the merchant processor sends me that information. I can put in a label and ship the product to you and then show that it's fulfilled and complete the cycle. But you don't buy from my webpage. My webpage is simply descriptions with order buttons. And when you click on that order button, you go off to Visa Land, where they take your information. They put your information, run your card through your credit card information through their system. And that's where that stays. I don't, you know, a company like Penny's, remember Penny's was hacked and all these people lost their credit card information. That's insane. Why is a company like Penny's keeping credit card information? Well, it's because they want to do marketing analysis and things like that. But they're also putting the purchaser at risk by maintaining those credit card data in a very unsecure server database setting. I don't do that. When you buy from me and you go off to fill out your information, your name, your address, your credit card, and you know all that information, you're not on my page anymore. So why on planet Earth, or in this corner of the universe, should I be forced to have an SSL security certificate? I don't take information. But that's what they're trying to force everybody to do that has a sales page. And I guarantee you, 99.9% of all sales pages of people selling stuff don't take information. Like John Moore uses PayPal. John Moore is not taking your credit card information and all that information on his website. He's sending you off to PayPal, where then you pay PayPal, and PayPal keeps that in. And that's one of the big benefits of PayPal, which I started using. And the purchasing goes through that. I have another sales page that's coming online shortly that uses PayPal. I could put it on my current page, but the point is PayPal is a secure. When you go to PayPal, it's HTTPS secure, and you're off in PayPal land, and they have all kinds of checks and balances and protection for the consumer, and if anything happens, you're protected, etc. I'm not big enough to have all of that computer protection and everything like that. So why should I, Jim McCanny, be required to have a SSL socket, a secure socket layer certificate? It doesn't make any sense because I do not take your information. When you select to purchase something, you go off someplace else that is secure. And they take care of that, and I pay them to do that. And everybody else does the same thing, unless you're like Pennies and stupid enough to start collecting people's credit card information and think that you're the big guy on the block and nobody's going to hack you. That's stupid. Or Target, or any of these other places that get hacked and release credit card information from people. Okay, so that's problem number one, is that the average guy selling something on the web page, on the internet, does not need a SSL certificate because he's not taking your data. So they're trying to force everybody, and this is like a scare tactic. Like, we got to do all of this so that everything's secure. Well, no, for the reason I just explained. Number two problem, SSL uses the public encryption key system, which is broken. It doesn't work. It was broken a decade ago, literally a decade ago, in the public eye. Before that, it was broken. And people ask me, why did I publish that material? I published that material so it would become obvious that the SSL and the public key encryption system based on prime numbers is not a viable system and it should not be used. Now, when I released that book, I pre-sold it, something I am probably one of the few peoples on the planet, one of the few persons on the planet that can pre-sell a book without anybody knowing the title. And it was posted on a Monday. Remember, it was a Monday night, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And he got the book in his hand that morning. And so anyway, that night was the first time, and he read the title on the air. And immediately, somebody called in who was an engineer, and he said, does this mean that the RSA encryption codes are in danger? And I said, yes, they're broken. And so not many people may have understood that little exchange, but right there, everybody, the word went out the next day. I got calls from attorneys. I got calls from aerospace engineers working on black ops projects. I got calls from all kinds of people who understood that the private key encryption system was broken, and they all know what the problem was. A guy named Michael Chertoff, who was at the time head of Homeland Security, got up on a podium and he said, this is a quote, all of our encryption is broken. We don't know how bad it is, and we don't know how to fix it. And the reason is because everybody had been using a private key encryption in hardware, in software, in military applications, in banking, in programs for banks, and for decades. And when a programmer would get an assignment, they didn't write down what they did. They didn't tell people where they put in public key encryption because everybody assumed that it was infinite and nobody could ever crack it. And so nobody in their wildest dreams ever imagined that somebody would solve the prime number problem, which would lead to the destruction of the public key encryption system, which was used universally. Okay, and then I also explained how the NSA got in the picture and insisted that the company selling encryption would keep in selling the public key encryption because they didn't want to retool. The NSA did not want to retool so that they could have a system getting into your private computer, etc. And in everything else, your phone, your tablet, SSL is used on all of this. Okay, so anyway, there's two major problems with this. Now, you're going to hear more about this. This might be the first time any of you are hearing about this, but you're going to hear a lot about this in the near future. It's just coming out. I called up my IP IT people who do work on my webpage and oversee some things for my webpage, and they were just starting to learn about this also. That this was, they already knew about it. They knew about SSL certification, but they weren't aware of the big push that was coming to have all web pages come up with a socket, a secure socket layer security certificate. Anyway, I hope this is clear. This is rather complicated stuff. And just to tell you what happens when, say you're in your computer, you're typing up an email, and you have the option to have encryption on your email. Or say you're doing a purchase, or you're going to your bank, and you type in your password and you hit return. All of a sudden, you look up in the URL window and it has HTTPS up there, whereas the login screen only had HTTP. So that means you're now off into secure socket layer land, so to speak, computer land. And what happens is you're typing on your keyboard, etc. That goes into memory in your computer. It drops down into a layer, a memory layer, that says this is something to be sent out. It has an address on it. It has other header information. And then that goes off to the web page that you're communicating with, the bank, the place where you're buying something, the, you know, whatever. And like I say, even my merchant provider for my credit card company uses a system that is much better than SSL. So you won't see it on my webpage. I have a system that is much better than SSL, which is broken. But there's a lot of people out there still using SSL. And let me just say something here. Let me interject. It's not like every one of your transactions is going to be hacked. Very unlikely, because you're one of millions of people on the internet at a given time, and your little order and your little credit card don't make a hill of beans difference. Somebody would not rob me if they wanted to get rich. My credit cards don't have that big a limit, so it's not worth anybody's time to try and hack me or anything I'm doing, because I'm not a rich guy. But if you take somebody like Exxon Oil or J.C. Penney's or Home Depot or any of these other companies that have been hacked, yeah, then there you got some reason to go in there, spend some time if you're a hacker. And that's why I call my book Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Because there's some people that might just break into the Pentagon, War Games computer program just to have a good time, just to play around. But there's other people who would break into a financial institution. If you're doing that, you're there for money. You're there for, getting credit card information or other information about people that can be used to make money. And so, anyway, I hope this makes sense. But I'm personally also on the warpath and in communication with people to try and prevent this ridiculous movement towards SSL, enforcing all kinds of web pages, including my own, to get, and this is like, for me, to get a basic SSL certificate would be about $50 a year. But I don't want one. I don't want a SSL certificate. I don't want that slapped on my page, and I don't have to, want to have to pay some bogus company that is selling error, or worse than error, they're selling something that's broken that I don't even need or want, and forcing me to buy it. That's like highway robbery. That's like stopping you from going down the road and saying, give me $50. And then the next guy comes and give me $50 too. Because if you pay me $50, I'm going to make sure the rest of your trip is safe. When they can't make a trip, they can't promise that the rest of your trip is going to be safe because they're selling bogus. You know, it's bogus. The whole thing is bogus. And what they're selling is something that's not even secure. So I hope this is clear. Pass this on to your friends and the neighbors, etc. But this issue of SSL and secure web pages, etc., what is the bottom line? Okay, first of all, when you're John J. Public Online or Suzy Q. Public and you're online and you're doing your banking and you're doing your other stuff, chances are there's probably not somebody sitting at the other end of the bank hacking in and watching your transactions. So chances are you're safe. The problem comes in when you start dealing with big companies like JCPenney's or other companies that are holding credit card data, and they're holding your credit card data, and somebody hacks into there and gets your information. So that's the realistic. It's very doubtful you sitting on your computer buying, you know, laundry soap online or whatever you buy online, underwear, whatever you buy online, Jim McKenney's products, very unlikely that you're going to be hacked and people are going to get your information and use your credit card. And it's just, and with my system, it's very secure. It's not SSL. I would not use SSL because it's broken, but I have a very good secure system. And, you know, and even if you were using a system with SSL, chances are there's nobody sitting there going to hack into your transmission or your purchase, or you're going to your bank or whatever. You're not a big enough cookie out there. You're not a big enough bank account for anybody to bother with, unless you're a millionaire. And typically there you'd be working through a bank or some other institution, not flashing your money online on your own personal computer or whatever. The other thing that can happen is people can get in and get your passwords, and they can cause you more problems than anything else, like sending spam out with your email address. Or, you know, this happens to me. In fact, I got to go in tonight and change my password again on my email account because somebody has gotten it. And that's why I don't have email lists. I don't email out spam or newsletters. I don't do any of that because email is a bad system. It's broken. It could be fixed. I could fix it in a day so that nobody would have any hacking. But unfortunately, people can spoof your address. And this doesn't mean you've been hacked and had your password taken. What this means is somebody can copy your email address and send it out from a server from China, for example. And then it gets on a spam list or something. You know, so this is the kind of goofy stuff that happens in the cyber world today that is all because of the NSA demanding that this be allowed so that they can get into your computer. And once the hackers know about how to do this, the same back doors that the NSA requires, then, hey, the door is open. So this can all be cured. I just saw Trump appointed Rudy Giuliani as the head of cyber espionage in his administration. So I think that's a good appointment. I think Giuliani will be very good at that. He's both an attorney. I don't know if he's been a judge, but he was the mayor of New York City during 9/11. And I didn't like Giuliani at the time. I think he's a much straighter shooter now. I think his appointment as head of cybersecurity is a very good appointment. And I think he's going to have some very good people under him. And that's why I'll be doing some work in that vein. I don't know exactly what capacity, but I have 25 years experience in the telecommunications industry. 10 of those years were spent designing front-end processors with the encryption codes, the telecommunication codes, with attending standards meetings, and optimizing these systems for rapid transmission on noisy lines through satellite systems, etc. And we never, ever, ever had an incident of hacking. This was for oil companies, the federal government, state governments, big business, private businesses, small businesses. You can build a secure network without having hacking. And so anyway, what I'm saying is I will be doing some work in this vein and trying to shape and, for example, stop this ridiculous SSL from being pushed through, because here's the problem. Congress is stupid. Maybe some of them are well-meaning, but basically, when it comes to something like cybersecurity, you can pull the wool over their eyes all day and all night, and they won't even know it. So it takes somebody to come up and say, look, this is what's going on, this is the way it is, and this is what you got to do. In a manner like on this show where they will understand it, and then you have to trust. In fact, in previous administrations, I wouldn't have even talked to anybody because they're all corrupt and stupid. We have a chance now to actually turn this world around and have a decent world again, get rid of broken encryption codes, get rid of the NSA snooping and spying, get rid of the CIA creating fake news and requiring computers to be built with hack hardware and software built right into it. Remember my Windows 11 OS system? Which I was going to build as an operating system so that you would have control of your phone again. Okay, enough of that. I'm going to quick switch and talk about Alphen currents in outer space. And the main point I want to make tonight is that the currents you see rolling down the galactic arms, and you see some star clusters just lighting up like a light bulb. You actually see, there's a great picture on my webpage. You see the gases between the star systems lighting up like a light bulb, but that is not the energy source that fires up the fusion star. The fusion star is an internal fire that occurs within. There's some yo-yos running around the internet saying that electrical currents cause our sun's fusion. Totally false, because if there was that much current coming in, that much energy and electrical currents coming into our solar system, it would be hitting the planets, it would be hitting planet Earth, and we'd basically be French fried in a second if that much energy were flowing through the solar system, because electrical currents tend to find objects and flow in the objects, with the objects in the path. So Earth would be directly in the path of one of those powerful electrical currents, and we would just be French fried, and that does not happen. So electrical currents are not the cause of fusion in stars. So there's some people that like to copy my work who have all of these ding-dong ideas out there that don't work, so I want to make sure you're clear on that. I'm not talking about electrical currents that cause the sun to ignite and burn fusion. Now, last week on my paid cast, I delved into this topic a bit of fusion in stars, because if you're looking at fusion research, remember the title of last week's paid cast was The Myth of Fusion Research. And I have some pictures in the notes of these humongous, these machines that they've built to try and build magnetic bubbles for fusion, etc., and ludicrous, and they don't work. So billions of dollars being spent in fusion research, and this thing I keep saying over and over again in that show is you cannot develop a fusion reactor, if you don't know what fusion is all about in nature. So with just a couple minutes to go here, I'm going to explain the current sources. This is the energy source that you see when you see that picture on my homepage. These are stars that have like a, it looks like a spider kind of, or some kind of insect with lightning, basically looks like a neon bulb. In other words, electricity flowing through this star system with a lot of dust and gas that's being lit up. The fusion center of the galaxy is the same fusion process that's going on in our sun, except it's much more powerful. The fusion process, by its very nature, separates charge. And so the solar wind that comes off of our sun is the exact same solar wind, fusion wind, that comes off the galactic nucleus. So down the galactic arms, which is a nice current path, go these currents. They flow back. In other words, the currents that typically occur in our solar system when comets come through the solar system has a different path in the galaxy, in that you have these continuous arms that flow from way out all the way into the galactic nucleus. And this provides the electric energy. In the year 2003, I believe it was, I released my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And the talk I gave it, the video of that talk, is on one of my DVDs, DVD set number 1 and 2 on my webpage. And the title of that talk is Electric Highways to the Stars, in which I show how to ride these electrical currents down the galactic arms. These are the highways that are used to transport down the galactic arms between star systems. And if you're in a very dense star cluster, you would have the ability to move along these electrical current paths. And so anyway, in addition to that, I developed the propulsion system that would be used. So the difference between the galactic, in fact, there are discharges that occur between quasars and galaxies, and it's the same process that comets use to discharge the solar capacitor. And so in the solar system, we have planets that are discharging the solar capacitor continually, but not to a high degree because they're in circular orbits, something I identified in my earlier work. And comets, because they are coming into the solar system on elliptical paths, it's like the backyard bug killer, where they break the field lines and the current always flows where the bug is, the same as with comets. Okay, so I wanted to give a little bit more time to this topic, but I wanted to give most of the time to the SSL topic. Remember to go to my webpage one more day of the sales, and then I'm restructuring prices starting tomorrow. The webpage, jmccsci.com. Also, all my books, the other special products like the Recalendar Sun Star Clock. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.